From Pacifico Radio, this is Democracy Now!
I know an admiral, really nice fellow. He said, Helen, he said, our mission at the Pentagon is to destroy property and kill people. And I'm reminded of Germany. The only way evil flourishes is for good people to do nothing. Is that not us? If you love this planet, you will change the priorities of your life and work every second of every day to save it.
Today, Dr. Helen Caldicott on the state of the world. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. For the first time since the Gulf War, the Pentagon plans to move a full combat division of U.S. forces to within striking distance of Iraq. Overall, 50,000 troops are expected to be sent to the region this month. Meanwhile, U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan has said there's no cause for war against Iraq because Baghdad is cooperating with the weapons inspectors. In Pakistan, politicians are condemning the Bush administration after the U.S. military bombed a religious school along the Pakistan-Afghanistan border, killing at least one person. In Brazil, hundreds of thousands celebrated the inauguration yesterday of working-class hero Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who's sworn into office. Agence France-Presse reports only the Pope and the Brazilian football team have ever garnered such an outpouring of enthusiasm from the country. In Washington, opponents of abortion are preparing a major push for new abortion restrictions in the next Congress, beginning with the type of abortion procedure that abortion opponents call partial birth abortion. If Senate Republicans get their way, says the New York Times, it will soon be a crime to evade parental notification laws by taking a minor across state lines for an abortion. It'll also become a separate crime to harm a fetus during an attack on a pregnant woman. And they want to allow hospitals and other health care providers to refuse to perform abortions without fear of penalty, including the loss of federal money. In Washington, the State Department has accused Boeing and Hughes Electronics of illegally providing China with technology that could be used for intercontinental missiles. In an article headlined, Hebron residents describe an Israeli rain of beatings, the New York Times reports today in the West Bank town of Hebron, quote, curfews, interrogations, and beatings have become as commonplace as shopping and going to school. In other news from the occupied territories, the Israeli human rights group B'Tselem is reporting that more than 1,000 Palestinians are now being held by Israel without charges or trial. The group said it was the largest number in 12 years. Global warming over the past century has resulted in mass migrations of species across the world towards cooler areas, and perennial spring activities such as flowering and egg hatching are being sped up across the globe. This according to two reports in the magazine Nature. It's the first time scientists have established that a variety of organisms and myriad habitats are responding in similar ways to climactic change. And saying the Bush administration is gutting the Clean Air Act, nine northeastern states are suing to overturn new environmental rules that went into effect on December 31st. Coal-fired power plants will now be allowed to avoid costly pollution controls that the states say will result in dirtier air and more acid rain. And finally, tens of thousands of Yemenis chanting death to extremists and terrorists gathered in the capital Sana'a yesterday for the funeral of a prominent opposition official shot dead by a member of a rival party. Jerala Omar, deputy secretary general of the Yemeni Socialist Party, was killed on Saturday, 2 days before three U.S. missionaries were shot dead at a Baptist mission hospital. Omar was killed by Ali Jerala, a member of the Islamic opposition ISLA party, during an ISLA conference. Officials say he was a comrade of the gunman accused of killing the three Americans. And you are listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Today, as the headlines tout the new Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist's credentials as a heart surgeon, we're going to spend the hour with another physician, activist and writer Dr. Helen Caldicott. She's become world famous for her anti-nuclear activism. She likes to say in the late 70s she started talking about the dangers of nuclear war as a physician. She said most Americans responded, it's better to be dead than red. So she started talking about the actual medical effects of nuclear war. She formed the Physicians for Social Responsibility. Educators formed Educators for Social Responsibility. Business people got together because they saw nuclear war would be bad for business, and there was a revolution in attitudes towards nuclear nuclear war. Her latest book is The New Nuclear Danger, George Bush's Military-Industrial Complex. She spoke recently at Smith College.
Medicine. If we don't diagnose the cause of an illness, we can't cure it. We never knew what caused polio, and people were paralysed all over the place, infantile paralysis. My mother wouldn't let me eat apples or go to the local swimming pool because we didn't know what caused it, till Jonas Salk, who worked with me in the physicians' movement, worked out that the polio virus caused poliomyelitis, and thus we were able to immunise people, and we don't see it anymore. If you go to India, it's rife. Now, the cause of the nuclear arms race and the situation in the world today is the minds of these men running this country and in other countries too, but mostly the United States. And it's important that we psychoanalyze these people for the public health of the planet. And if we find they're mentally or psychologically inappropriate for our survival, they must be removed from office on an urgency basis. And in this book, I do short CVs on all of them, and they're quite revealing, and I'll go into this a little later. Now, what is the situation? So America's got 2,500 hydrogen bombs on hair trigger alert. Remember, there are only 240 cities in the Northern Hemisphere, major cities, 240. So 2,500 hydrogen bombs, and so is Russia. America's got a policy to fight and win a nuclear war. Now, Russia's best friends. Putin goes to the Crawford Ranch and he eats hot dogs. He drives around in George Bush's little golf cart. I don't know what else they do at Crawford, but Bush said, I looked into his soul and I saw that I could work with him and trust him. Okay? So they're best friends. Yet America's policy still is to fight and win a nuclear war. And how do you do that? Well, let me just tell you, you've got 18 Trident submarines at sea at any one time. On each submarine, and they're noiseless, silent submarines, are 24 missiles, and in each missile are 8 hydrogen bombs. 8. You've got 50 MX missiles, which Reagan nicknamed the Peacekeeper. On each MX missile are 10 hydrogen bombs. And then we go to this book. And we look at the Minutemen missiles scattered. You can look down when you fly across the country at the Midwest and see the missile silos scattered across your country. Let me see. There's a map here of Missouri. Looks like it's got measles. Can you see that? All the red dots? Okay, what's the next state? Montana. That's where the film stars go and have their homes because there are lots of moose and deer and things out there and bears. Okay, what's the next one? South Dakota. And I can go on and on. In each silo are two men aged 18 to 21, each armed with a pistol, one to shoot the other if one shows signs of deviant behaviour. Conditioned like Pavlovian dogs, yes sir, no sir, press the button, sir. You see, they have to be. Men who've never really lived or experienced life, probably never delivered a baby or seen a child die or helped anyone to die. The key locks to turn the missiles are 12 feet apart, so one man can't get to turn both keys, but if you tie a string on one key, you can actually turn both keys and launch a nuclear war.
You're listening to Dr. Helen Caldicott giving a speech at Smith College on November 12th. Dr. Helen Caldicott was nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize, and she is talking about the state of the world.
How do you win a nuclear war? It goes like this and go along with this sort of fantastical logic. The Russians and the Americans have satellites circling consistently in the satellites are infrared detectors. So if America launches a missile, Russia picks up the heat from the missile and radios back to its control center in Moscow. So if America wants to fight and win a nuclear war, you've got to knock out their eyes and ears. So you're working really hard on anti-satellite warfare at the moment, and Lockheed Martin is doing most of that, the biggest corporation in the country, military corporation in the world, which really runs the Bush administration. Then you knock out the command and control center, which is Moscow, with a nuclear weapon. And then you launch your missiles in a huge swarm, and the hydrogen bombs land very accurately on each Russian missile silo, and you kill their missiles. That's the military terminology, you kill them. Now, if you miss a few and some get launched, you're building a national missile defence system so that it will wipe out the Russian missiles that gets launched. Star Wars is really about fighting and winning a nuclear war. Now, so then you've won the nuclear war. You've killed their missiles. The fact is that billions of people dying as a result, that's called by the military collateral damage. We don't get killed. The missiles get killed, and our deaths are irrelevant to the Pentagon. Now, so serious is this that in 1995, the Russians picked up the fact that someone had launched an American missile, a Titan missile, and there was a Norwegian weather satellite on top. The Pentagon had notified the Kremlin, but they lost the data. Oh, the Russians are sort of hopeless. They lost it. And they picked up the telemetry from this missile and said, good God, America's launched a first strike against us to win a nuclear war. There's Yeltsin sitting there before the nuclear football, open for the first time in the history of the nuclear age, sozzled. He drank at least 2 bottles of vodka a day. Almost certainly he had Wernicke's encephalopathy and Korsakoff syndrome, which you get from alcoholism and pickling your brain. Now, by the time the missile was launched and the satellite picked up the attack and radioed back to Moscow, that loop took 15 minutes. The missiles take 30 minutes to land. So when the footballs opened with the directions to press the buttons, he had 3 minutes to decide whether or not to annihilate the planet and America and Australia, because we're covered with US bases, which I plan to get rid of. So he's sitting there, and the general's over his shoulder saying, Mr. President, press that button there. 10 seconds before the end of that 3 minute interval, the missile veered off course. That's why you're still sitting in those chairs and you're not radioactive atoms floating around in the stratosphere. January 1995, what were you doing then? That was reported in the New York Times in a big story, but it was back page near the obituaries. The New York Times and the media are determining the fate of the Earth. Why wasn't it headlines, 10 seconds from annihilation, like 9 miners saved in the mines from Pennsylvania? Why does the media decide to keep us all ignorant? Why the New York Times? I mean, I can understand NBC, which is owned by GE. Now, no one else is to leave the room. I can see people getting up and walking out because they think I'm boring. You're not to go. This is very important, and I want the doors locked. If you have to go to the bathroom, you can, but on no other circumstances are you to leave the room. A, it's rude to leave a visiting lecturer, and B, what I'm saying tonight will determine your future and whether or not you live or die. Okay? Students are not to leave the room, nor any adults. And those guys can guard the doors. All right. So we were 10 seconds from annihilation. Now let's describe what would happen if there was a nuclear war. Let's pretend, for instance, when you're listening to NPR and you hear, ooh, and a very deep male voice says, we are just testing the emergency broadcasting system. This time there'd be an announcement, we are under nuclear attack, run to the nearest fallout shelter. You'll have about 10 minutes to get there. You'll never get there. And in comes this bomb, hydrogen bomb, at 20 times the speed of sound, and you won't even hear it come in. It will land on this beautiful auditorium and explode with the heat inside the centre of the sun, turning this building and millions of tons of rock and earth to radioactive fallout shot up in that swirling mushroom cloud. Sorry, I've got one button undone because I'm hot. So if you see a little bit of stomach, it's quite fashionable these days anyway. Okay, then 5 miles from all directions from here, everyone's going to be vaporized. In Hiroshima, a little tiny bomb was exploded, which killed about 120,000 people in a flash of light. and a little boy was reaching up to catch a red dragonfly in his hand against the blue sky, and there was a blinding flash, and he literally disappeared, and his shadow is in the museum at Hiroshima on the pavement. It's all that was left. 20 miles from here, and think of where you live, in all directions, everyone will be grotesquely burnt. The burned patient is the most difficult patient we ever treat. Hundreds of units of blood and plasma and serum leaking out, terrible infections, skin transplants, and often then we still lose the patients. There aren't many burned beds in the whole of the United States. But don't worry, the White House is stockpiling large quantities of morphine just in case it's going to be a nuclear war. Winds of 500 miles an hour will suck people out of the buildings and turn them into missiles traveling at 100 miles an hour through the air. Then, if you look at the flash 50 miles out, you'll get retinal burns and be instantly blinded, and the whole area would become engulfed in a firestorm of 3,000 square miles. So if you're in a fallout shelter, you'll asphyxiate from the heat of the fires using up the oxygen. Now, I only dropped one bomb. There are 2,500 that can drop on America. Every single town and city with a population of 10,000 or more is targeted with at least one of those. Every university, every college, every corporation, every factory, even railway yards. 20 probably targeted on Washington alone. That is Bill Clinton's legacy.
You are listening to Democracy Now. Helen Caldicott is speaking about the state of the world.
You mustn't interrupt me. You can ask questions afterwards. Because I have to build up, you know. Anyway, so we live under the threat of annihilation every second of every day. The Russian early warning system is falling apart. The satellites only work one third of the day. Read it in this. People steal copper wiring from the early warning systems and the radars and the like because they're so poor in Russia. And the Pentagon is building up more and more nuclear weapons. Now, what is the Pentagon actually up to apart from fighting and winning a nuclear war, which is insanity? The Pentagon and the nuclear weapons labs are building new nuclear weapons. They've got the second Manhattan Project going. Hands up those who know what the first Manhattan Project was. Okay, for those who do not, it was when they built the first three nuclear weapons. The first one was called Trinity, named after the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. And when they blew it up in the desert, if it didn't work, the telegram to the president was to read, "It's a girl." It did work. And the telegram, of course, read, "It's a boy." And right from the beginning of the nuclear age, there's been a sexual underpinning, archetypal Jungian underpinning to the whole thing. Second one was called Little Boy, dropped on Hiroshima, killed 120,000 people, and thus began the age of nuclear genocide. And the third was dropped on Hiroshima 3 days later on a Christian city which no one would thought would America bomb. It took a huge amount of money and manpower and brilliance to build those three nuclear weapons. And afterwards, the scientists said to themselves, for the first time, physicists have known sin. Then they developed the nuclear power program, thinking they could harness atoms for peace and assuage their guilt. As Robert Oppenheimer, who developed the first three weapons, watched Trinity blow up, he muttered under his breath, he said, "I have become death, the destroyer of worlds," from the Bhagavad Gita, because he knew that nuclear weapons had the power to destroy the whole creation, the only life in the universe. And God damn those people, they've kept building nuclear weapons ever since. Do you know how many nuclear weapons America built in the nuclear age? 77,000. When 1,000 bombs dropping on 100 cities would create nuclear winter and cover the earth with a cloud of thick, black, oily radioactive smoke, blocking out the sun for a year, causing a short ice age, and maybe only the cockroaches would survive. So they built 77 times the number for annihilation of life on the earth. It's called an addiction. It's like an alcoholic reaching for their next drink. And every other country that supports the United States, including my own, are enablers to America's nuclear addiction. Then, of course, Russia got them. So why would Russia want them? Because she wants to be the big guy on the block too, huh? Then France got them because she lost her empire and wants to be like Napoleon again. Britain got them because she lost her empire. China got them, but she's only got 18 missiles that can hit you, only 18. So she's really a very small nuclear power. India and Pakistan got them because they copy you. Everyone wants to copy America, don't they? Because they, you know, the propaganda that goes out would say that this is the greatest country on earth. So we all want to be like you. And we end up being like you, and then we're not happy, really. Anyway, that's a different issue.
You are listening to Dr. Helen Caldicott speaking at Smith College on the state of the world today. We'll be back in a minute.
Maybe it's the real crooks, maybe it's the drugs, maybe it's the parents, maybe it's the colors everybody's wearing. Maybe it's the president, maybe it's the last one, maybe it's the one before that, what he done. Maybe it's the high schools, maybe it's the teachers, maybe it's the tattooed children in the bleachers. Maybe it's the Bible, maybe it's the lack, maybe it's the music, maybe it's the crack. Maybe it's the hairdos, maybe it's the TV, maybe it's the cigarettes, maybe it's the family, maybe it's the fast food, maybe it's the news, maybe it's divorce, maybe it's abuse, maybe it's the lawyers, maybe it's the prison, maybe it's the senators, maybe it's the system, maybe it's the fathers, maybe it's the sons, maybe it's the sisters, maybe it's the moms, maybe it's the radio, maybe it's the road rage, maybe El Nino or UV rays, maybe it's the army, maybe it's the liquor, maybe it's the papers, maybe the militia, maybe it's the athletes, maybe it's the ads, maybe it's the sports fans, maybe it's a fad. Maybe it's the magazines, maybe it's the internet, maybe it's the lottery, maybe it's the immigrants, maybe it's taxes, big business, maybe it's the KKK and the skinheads, maybe it's the communists, maybe it's the Catholics.
If it were up to me, Holly Neer here on Democracy Now!'s War and Peace Report as we continue with Dr. Helen Caldicott, founder of Physicians for Social Responsibility, talking about who's got nuclear weapons in the world.
Who else has got them? Israel. Israel's the third largest nuclear nation in the world with 300 hydrogen bombs. So why don't we go in and have inspections in Israel? Why don't we have civilian inspections in America, which is the largest rogue nation in the world? Maybe we could all dress up in white coats and stethoscopes and, you know, and hard hats and stuff and say we're going to go and inspect the nuclear weapons in America. The New York Times had a lead editorial which said, America, the rogue state. And the New York Times is pretty conservative. So that was an interesting thing. But now, in order to get the scientists in the nuclear weapons labs to allow the non-proliferation treaty to get through the Senate, Clinton bribed them. And he said, look, I'll give you $5 billion a year for the next 15 years. And they said it's for stockpile stewardship and maintenance, SS&M, which also has sexual connotations, to make sure that the bombs are reliable. When they blow up with 20 megatons and not 18 megatons. I mean, what we need is the bombs to go rusty and not work. But actually what the labs are doing is designing, testing and developing new nuclear weapons as I speak. But America doesn't have any enemies. Yeah, well, I mean, you've got some terrorists who don't like you, but you've got a few zealots in this country too, including those right-wing Christians who believe that Armageddon is going to come because it says it in Revelations, and when Armageddon comes, it's going to be nuclear war, and one-third of the human race, which is them, are going to be raptured up. It's to be raptured, it's a verb, up to the sky to meet Jesus in their nightgowns and their dressing gowns. And all of us are going to be burnt in the fires of hell because we deserve it because we're not Christians. And all the Jews, just before it happens, are all going to be instantly converted to Christianity too, and they're going to be raptured up to meet heaven too, meet to heaven. And in fact, John Ashcroft believes this. I think probably George Bush does. Reagan certainly did. His defense minister or secretary, Weinberger, believed in it. And the right-wing Christians control the Republican Party, and that's, I think, partly how they got back into power with such large majorities. 70 million of them are foot soldiers to work for the Republican Party because they really want Armageddon to happen. And so it's all good that we've got a first-strike winnable nuclear war policy and the weapons are still on hair trigger alert. Now, the scientists themselves are very interesting. They are like Merlin, or who was the, in Lord of the Rings, who was the wizard? Who? Yeah, Gandalf. And they because they've captured the energy inside the stars, The politicians, who are mostly scientifically illiterate, about 3% of politicians are scientifically literate. They literally bow down in front of these people when they walk to Congress, like Edward Teller, who designed the superbomb, the hydrogen bomb, and others. Now, the nuclear weapons scientists work in a cult, and the rite of passage into the cult is to design your own bomb and blow it up. Now, the night before the bomb has exploded in the desert in Nevada, deep underground, the man who designed the bomb sleeps with the mechanisms to blow up the bomb by himself in a little hut in the desert. He sleeps with annihilation. He talks about giving birth to the bomb. He talks about having labour pains and the need to push. He talks about having postnatal depression after the bomb explodes. If you want to check this out, this work was done by an anthropologist called Hugh Gustafson, who went out and drank beer with them at the pubs, and they talked to him. It's also very interesting that the language they use for the bombs, if I can find it, is very interesting. Where can I find it? Oh, dear, I should have looked it up before I started talking. But wait, will you just give me a second to see if I can find it? Wait. Darn, I can't find it. Yeah, here it is. The scientists felt that their technical mastery over the bomb implied that they would then be able to control the impending annihilation that their work signified. But in psychological terms, the mastery they had acquired actually implied that they had intense fear of the bomb and of death. The first bomb ever blown up in the desert, called Trinity, was called Oppenheimer's Baby, in honour of Oppenheimer. When the bomb explodes, it gets married to the diagnostic canister, and as it explodes, it couples with the ground, making daughter fission products that pass through generations. And I said one of the scientists described the test as like having a baby. But they also use language for the weapons which is analogous to human language. It says, on the other hand, unlike the nurturing instincts of a new mother, much of their language reflects their profound dehumanisation of people. To them, people are human resources and components within a system. They describe human communication as interfacing and miscommunications as disconnects. The pain of human injuries is referred to as damage, and when a human being is killed, she is disassembled. The Pentagon echoes this language, calling targeting of cities countervaluing targeting. People are dubbed soft targets. Missile silos are hard targets. Gustafson said, techno-strategic discourse is characterised by its lack of emotion, its game-theoretical models of human motivation, its fondness for abstraction and for passive sentence constructions, its focus on hardware rather than people. At its fundamental unquestionable assumption that weapons development must continue. As they remove pain and fear from their vocabulary, see, this is the pathology that I talked about initially, that we've got to be courageous enough to psychoanalyse and remove these people from office. Presumably, the scientists are protecting their psyches from the human consequences of the work. At the same time, they wax lyrical about their weapons, describing nuclear equipment as beautiful and their relationships to technology as zen. Weapons are arms, bombs are warheads, a nuclear attack is a decapitating strike. The strategic nuclear forces have three legs. Early warning satellites are eyes and ears. Missiles are covered with skins, and aging weapons grow whiskers that can interfere with their health. Isn't that fascinating? I mean, this is the fundamental basis that we have to start examining. You can talk about numbers of weapons till the cows come home, and about the medical effects of nuclear war till the cows come home. But unless we psychoanalyse the psyche of these people and decide they're inappropriate to what they're doing because they're about to blow up our Earth, then we're nowhere. And we have to do it with our politicians too. And I coined a new phrase the other day, politicians for social irresponsibility. Your Congress is full of them. They are bought and sold by the corporations time and time again, and even when those corporate scandals came out, the Democrats and Republicans were flying around in corporate jets, going to weekends paid by the corporations. They're corporate prostitutes. They do not represent you in any way, shape or form. Not at all. The drug companies paid $16 million for this election. The drug companies are making huge amounts of money. I speak now as a physician. They should make virtually no profit at all. Doctors shouldn't get rich. Teachers should be paid more than doctors because they have a greater responsibility towards society than do we. The White House is run by corporations. Lockheed Martin and Boeing and TRW, which are militarising space and building Star Wars and the like, 32 members from those corporations are in the administration. Lynn Cheney, Cheney's wife, do you know Dick, who lives mostly underground in the fallout shelter in Washington? He's really the president. And he's protecting his life by living underground in case there's a nuclear war. His wife, Lynn, she sat on the board of Lockheed Martin for 20 years. Donald Rumsfeld is extremely closely associated with Lockheed Martin, as are others in the Pentagon. Colin Powell isn't, but he's been marginalised. And I'm going to talk about Iraq in a minute. So the rest of the people in the administration come from the Heritage Foundation. Hands up those who know what the Heritage Foundation is. Oh. Okay, hands up those who watch Jim Lehrer and Ted Koppel. Oh. What do you watch on television, Fox? You don't watch television. Hello, Francis. No, what do you watch? Or don't you watch television? ABC?
PBS.
Yeah, well, they've been bought and sold too, haven't they? They've all lost their souls, like Faust. The Heritage Foundation is what they call a right-wing think tank funded by Lockheed Martin. It's really an advertising agency for Lockheed Martin. And every time you turn on the television, there's one right-winger debating another right-winger. They're never saying, well, actually, should we go into Iraq? And maybe that's immoral. They're saying, we're going into Iraq, this, this, and this. Someone said the media have become stenographers. All they do is write down what Rumsfeld said, rummy speak. You know, he speaks a sort of funny language that no one can really understand, but he's very charming. I heard a man on NPR today talking about Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and who really runs this presidency and how George Bush doesn't really understand much at all. But there was no moralising. They were reporting facts, but they weren't talking about whether or not what is happening would be immoral or illegal, and I'm reminded of Germany. The only way evil flourishes is for good people to do nothing. Is that not us? It's a very, very dark time. Those Republicans run by the right-wing Christians, they're going to fill the courts up with Christians. They're not Christians. Jesus wouldn't have a bar of them. You know, Christianity isn't about... Christianity isn't about going to church on Sunday or going up to meet Jesus when you die. It's about living what the man preached, the greatest psychiatrist almost who ever lived. And what did he preach? He preached, love thine enemies. Very hard thing to do.
You're listening to Dr. Helen Caldicott. She was speaking at Smith College. If you'd like to get a copy of today's show, you can call 1-800-881-2359. That's 1-800-881-2359. As we go back now to Dr. Helen Caldicott in Massachusetts, speaking in November. Dr. Helen Caldicott, who was formerly the executive director of Physicians for Social Responsibility.
So the Heritage Foundation have peopled the White House. And, you know, if you see them on television, I've debated with a couple recently, they're very smooth, they're like snake oil salesmen. I mean, I was on with Larry King. I know Larry, I've been on with him for 30 years when he had a radio program. I was on for 7.5 minutes with Frank Gaffney for the Centre for Security Policy. He's a right-wing Star Wars aficionado. Got a moustache, looks okay. And he said, I had no right to be talking about this and Star Wars and the like because I'm an Australian. Then he said, I used to rant during the 80s about nuclear war, and I should have been quick enough witted to have said, well, that, you know, ranting produces a Nobel Peace Prize. So as I was on for 7.5 minutes with this man, so I only got about 3 minutes, and then on comes Pamela Anderson. If you've ever seen her, I'd never seen her before, she's got huge mammary glands. And she's terribly thin. She's a medical monstrosity. I mean, the poor girl, when she gets old, she's going to look awful. And then I thought, well, maybe I should have some implants too. And maybe Larry would have me on for an hour and I could talk about what I need to talk about. But isn't that typical of the media? Isn't it typical? And then during a break, he turned to me, he said, these people are really dangerous, aren't they? I said, yes, Larry. I said, they're sinister. We came back on air and he said, look, I'll have you on for half an hour. He said, we need to do more time on this. I'll do you from Australia. I rang them the other day. The producer said, well, we actually have no time to slot you in the next 3 weeks while you're here. And I said, you're lying to me, aren't you? Just tell me the truth. Did your top people say that I'm not to come on again? I'm being blocked from the media. So I am very annoyed about this, and it's Jefferson who said an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion, and this democracy is almost totally uninformed, hence the voting patterns. So, I'm setting up a new institute called the Nuclear Policy Research Institute. Rosie O'Donnell gave me $100,000 the other day. Richard Gere's given me only 10, but I need 850,000. I'm going to have an office in Washington with the very best media person who can ring the bureau chiefs and say, okay, tonight you're going to do Star Wars and you're going to have Jackie Cabasso on from California. Top notch, really good person. Or we're going to do a Bruce Gagnon, who is a Republican in the Air Force, charismatic speaker, knows all about the five layers of Star Wars and the militarization of space. And we are going to be proactive so the administration has to respond to us. And who owns the airwaves? Yeah. You own the airwaves. They have been co-opted and stolen from you, and that must not happen. So now you've got to take back your airwaves. What I'm calling for is revolution. But it's got to be a Gandhian-type revolution. How did Gandhi take on the British? He didn't go back in a uniform with a gun. He practiced asymmetry. He went back almost stark naked in a loincloth and conducted a salt march with tremendous sagacity and dignity, and he won. And don't just join organisations and do the same old thing, right? Let us, the Democrats, I mean, hopeless. I mean, as Gore Vidal says, you've got one political party with two right wings. I mean, it's hopeless. Hopeless. We've got to have a revolution from the grassroots up. So if I can get on Larry King or Phil Donahue or the like and speak to 20 million people and talk about the risk of nuclear war, then we've got 20 million people in the grassroots movement. Okay? And then you take over your country. Because, in fact, the politicians are your followers and you are their leaders. What's more, you've got to take a leaf out of our book in Australia. Voting must become compulsory. One. Two. Our campaigns are 3 weeks long. Three. The government pays for them. Why can't you have that? The post office has all your names and addresses. Everyone can automatically be registered to vote. And you can fix your country. Because if everyone voted, you'll probably have a free healthcare system like we do at home, totally free, paid for by our tax dollars. I've just worked at the Sydney Children's Hospital as a paediatric intern, best medical care in the world. Money is never mentioned. I go to the doctor, pay my bill, walk next door, and into my hand is given cold, hard cash by my government to pay for my doctor's visit. Oh, but isn't that socialism? Ooh, naughty word. What was Jesus? Huh? He was a socialist. Yes, he was. It's more difficult for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven than a camel to pass through the eye of a needle. What did the Good Samaritan do? He stopped and cared for the man. What did Jesus talk about all the time but love? What did the other prophets talk about? Love thy neighbour as thyself. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Free medical care system. Every person in this country requires an education like the people here at Smith get. Yeah, every single person. But where's the money coming from? Well, where does your money go? Yeah, well, how much? Nearly half a trillion. If you spent $1,000 a minute since Jesus was born, you would have just about spent $1 trillion. Almost half that amount is spent on death every year. Why do I say death? It's not the Department of Defence, it's the Department of Death. I know an admiral, really nice fellow. He said, Helen, he said, our mission at the Pentagon is to destroy property and kill people.
Dr. Helen Caldicott, you are listening to Democracy Now! If you want to get a copy of today's show, you can call 1-800-881-2359. Back in a minute. You're listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman as we return to Dr. Helen Caldicott.
What did the Bible say? Or any other religion? Thou shalt not kill. And in the nuclear age, any war could lead to a nuclear war and annihilation of the planet. Einstein got it right when he said the splitting of the atom changed everything, all reality, save man's mode of thinking. And I'm talking about these reptilian midbrains on the other end of the bell-shaped curve fed by testosterone. Thus we drift towards unparalleled catastrophe. We have to stop fighting. Now, there's one magic solution, and that is the fact that 53% of the Earth's population do not secrete testosterone from their gonads. They secrete estrogen and progesterone, which, if you've ever had a baby, are the most nurturing hormones. I felt when I was breastfeeding, I could feed the whole world. I was so nurturing. And it's interesting because there's a scientist who was in a lab recently who studies hormone levels, and she noticed that when something difficult came up in the lab and there was animosity, and don't any men take this personally, but the men would tend to go off and shut them doors and sort of fume and work out vengeance. When the women, they got upset, they cleaned the lab, they made coffee, and they sat around and talked. So she thought, that's very interesting. So she did the hormone levels. The hormone levels of the women under stress, oxytocin, which actually is responsible for uterine contraction, but clearly is a very nurturing hormone, went right up. And the testosterone levels in the men went right up. Isn't that interesting? So now why? Sociobiologically, why? If you go back to when we were troglodytes, 3 million years ago, we're a very young, primitive species. We sat in the caves breastfeeding our babies, and the men went out and killed the saber-toothed tigers and the marauding tribes, and they had to for us to survive. That was necessary because the world was a very scary place then. But there has been little evolution in this primitive evolutionary instinct for men to kill for territorial imperative. Whereas 53% of us are women, and we are not a minority, we're a majority. We do 2/3 of the world's work, for which we earn 10% of the income. We own 1% of the property and we have all the babies, and that's not without question. That is without question. So it's time that there was a mandated law mandating that 53% of the Congress and every single organisation in the world is composed of women. And the magic number is 30%. Below 30%, the women tend to vote for missiles. But above 30%, they reinforce each other and said, no, you're not getting your missiles, now we're voting for milk for the children. And that's good women, bad women, you know, right wing, left, all sorts of women, because there's a certain empathy we have and a need to nurture and preserve life. Now, in France, they've just passed a parity law saying that 50% of all people running for office have to be women. It's interesting that France should be ahead of the United States, isn't it? I'm just giving you lots of ideas for the revolution. Now, the next thing I want to describe is Star Wars. There are 5 layers of Star Wars. I won't go into it all. It's very complex. It will never work. But they're going to spend billions and billions and billions of dollars. In fact, this administration is spending 4 times as much money on Star Wars as on the State Department. Boy, do you need your diplomats. Your sagacious, wise people who speak all sorts of languages and are well-trained. They've been totally sidelined. The people conducting your foreign policy are Rumsfeld et al. Yeah, the Pentagon. That's totally inappropriate. The most important thing I want to say is that America is about to militarise space, which, according to the United Nations, belongs to the globe, all the people of the world. Don't forget, America's only 4.5% of the world's population. And why do they want to do that? Because NASA, that's really military, has been mapping the planets and the moon and the asteroids for rare minerals. Then they're going to launch nuclear reactors and put them on the planets. It's all in the book. Mine the rare minerals and bring them back, and the corporations get the profits and you pay for the whole thing. So if America expends so much capital in space, it's got to control it. I mean, why not? Dominate it. It's called full spectrum dominance. They're putting up anti-satellite weapons, orbiting nuclear reactors to power laser beam weapons that could take out cities with a flash of light and affect very many kills, they say, particle beam weapons, and possibly hydrogen bombs up there. One hydrogen bomb exploded high in space, shoots out such a voltage called electromagnetic pulse, it would take out the whole of the United States of America's wiring systems and totally paralyze the US. That's something else the Pentagon won't talk about because they know it's true, but they don't know what to do about it. These are the plans, they're ongoing, and this stuff is being built, as I speak, mostly by Lockheed Martin. Now, Iraq. The first invasion of Iraq by the United States was a nuclear invasion. America used shells made of uranium. Uranium is 1.7 times more dense than lead. So if you have an anti-tank shell, it develops tremendous momentum. Momentum equals mass by velocity. And it slices through the steel armor of a tank like a hot knife through butter. But it's pyrophoric, so when it hits the tank, it burns, producing tiny little particles that can be inhaled into the lung. They used up to 800 tons of it in Iraq, especially on those retreating soldiers on the death highway. Uranium-238 has a half-life of 4.5 billion years. So they left a radioactive battlefield, radioactive for the rest of time. Children are 10 to 20 times more radiosensitive than adults. The incidence of leukemia and cancer in the children in Basra, where these weapons were used, has gone up 6 to 12 times. Little girls aged 10 are getting breast cancer. Women are terrified to give birth because they're giving birth to monsters. The incidence of congenital deformities has tripled. Babies with single eyes. Babies born with no brain, no vault to the skull, just a nubbin of midbrain, so they cough, cry, suck, and then die. Babies with spina bifida, with no limbs. Americans don't know that because the media is conducting a conspiracy of silence. The Europeans know it because the soldiers who went to Kosovo for peacekeeping operations are getting leukemia and brain cancers. There's been a huge debate in the European Parliament. Your veterans are excreting uranium in their semen. What's in the semen? the most precious cells in the human body apart from the ovum, the sperm. There are 3,000 genetic diseases. My specialty, cystic fibrosis, is the most common. Can you imagine what that means? They also, these shells were polluted with plutonium, the most deadly substance known to human race, such that 1 pound, hypothetically, if adequately distributed, could give every person on Earth lung cancer. Strontium-90, which causes bone cancer and leukemia. Cesium-137, which is very carcinogenic. Because this uranium was reclaimed from old nuclear reactors in submarines and mixed with some of these products from the nuclear reactors. They used, I've just discovered, up to 1,000 tons of it in Afghanistan. And when they go in again, they're going to use them again. That's called evil. The armour of 1/3 of the tanks, of the American tanks, was made of uranium too, so the men sat in a radioactive environment with their testicles being irradiated. The most important organ in the male body, if you're talking about evolution. Now, they're going to go in. Doesn't matter what the United Nations says. George Bush doesn't understand it, but he's very belligerent now and very cocksure. They've got 250 troops over there at the moment, thousands of planes and the like, aircraft carriers. Every month since 1991, 5,000 children have died of waterborne diseases, cholera, typhoid, dysentery, because America on purpose bombed the water supplies and the sewage system, so they've been drinking dirty water. And because of the sanctions, they can't be treated. My colleagues stand at the foot of these children's beds, dying of leukemia, weeping, because they have no drugs, because of the sanctions applied by the United States. And they're going to do it again. And nobody knows. And I know if the whole of America knew this, they'd stop the war. It's not a war. It's annihilation. I mean, it's massacre. It's a radioactive war. There's a 50-50 chance they'll use a nuclear weapon there, a nuclear bunker buster, a real nuclear weapon, which the Russian satellite could pick up, the flash, misinterpret it for thinking America's launched missiles and launch their missiles like they nearly did in 95. We were on hair trigger alert, incidentally, on September 11th, in the highest state of alert, with planes in the air, B-52s armed with nuclear weapons. The guys wear one patch over one eye, so when they fly to Russia and drop the bombs, when they're blinded in one eye, they can take the patch off and they can fly home, but there'll be no home because everything's destroyed and incinerated. So we could have that could trigger nuclear winter. Or Israel said if Hussein launches Scuds towards her, she could use nuclear weapons back. And we're still at a point where we could have nuclear war between Russia and America, be triggered by that. The probability is not zero, and I can't give a number of having a global nuclear war because of this, but I could say maybe 10%, 5 to 10%. Are you prepared to go along with that risk of wiping out the only life in the universe? Hussein has no nuclear weapons. Dick Cheney says he doesn't. And if he's got biological and chemical, they were given to him by America because he's a CIA man and he was armed and financed by the United States to fight Iran when Iran thumbed its nose at America and took some American hostages. That war between Iran and Iraq killed over 1 million people, many of them little boys under the age of 14, child soldiers. Then the right wing say, well, when we've done Iraq, we're going to then do Iran. And then they say we might do China and Syria. It's all in here. They write about it. They're setting China up as a new Cold War enemy too. You know, life began in Iraq. That was where the Garden of Eden was. It's absolutely tragic. About 10% of the world's oil is there. And Hussein nationalised it. So America's got to have it so everyone can drive their SUVs and cause global warming and the destruction of 2/3 of the world's species and the rising of the seas and the drowning of 1/3 of the human population and spreading malaria epidemics around the world as the mosquitoes proliferate in the heat. That's what this war's about. SUVs. I don't know what else to say except that I'm really scared, and I wake up in the middle of the night and I can just see these Iraqi women, you know, with their babies. And I'm having a baby tonight, washing them and bathing them. You know, one of the loveliest things you do when you're a new mother is to bath the baby and put Johnson's baby powder on it. Put them in their diapers and wrap them in their shawls and put them in bed at night. Breastfeed them. And in a few weeks, there'll be hot shards of metal slicing through their bodies. And if you see these men talk on Oprah, and I was on Oprah the other day, they use me to justify the war. They have no idea. It's all male left-brain thinking. They're not talking about killing people at all. And the people who get killed are innocent people, men, women and children. War isn't about soldiers fighting soldiers these days. It's men dropping bombs from 40,000 feet in the air and never smelling the blood, or seeing the people with their intestines falling out of huge gashes in their abdomen, or babies with their heads blown off. They don't fight. They just murder from cyberspace, because Americans mustn't get killed, must they? After Vietnam. So we are right at the brink of the precipice. Never before has the world been in such a dangerous situation. This is a dahlia, one of my most favourite flowers. They bloom in the fall, as do chrysanthemums. I've got a book of Peter Pan and Wendy, and the paintings are by R.M. Rackham, who drew the most beautiful little fairies in the park, Windsor Park in London. And they've got chrysanthemums, like little old ladies hobbling along and the fairies playing. This represents that to me. We're so lucky to be here. We're so lucky to have been born and conceived. Life is such a privilege. It's so beautiful. Walk outside and smell the leaves falling from the trees in this lovely day. Look at their colours. It's an absolute miracle. Scuba dive under the sea and see the fish. And we're about to destroy it all. So, as I said in a speech years ago, if you love this planet, you will change the priorities of your life and work every second of every day to save it. And you'll never feel depressed again. You'll feel a sense of great joy and fulfillment. Thank you very much.
Dr. Helen Caldicott, speaking recently at Smith College in Massachusetts. And if you'd like to get a copy of today's program, you can call 1-800-881-2359. That's 1-800-881-2359. Our website is www.democracynow.org. Our email address is mail, M-A-I-L, at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Chris Abrams, Mike Burke, Angie Karen, Anna Noguera, and Alex Wolf. Mike DeFilippo is our engineer. Also thanks to Uri Gallet, Angela Alston, Emily Kunstler, Johnny Sender, Orlando Richard, Simba Russo, Fatima Mojadidi, and Karen Renucci. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to another edition of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!